Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Hope you're having a great start to your day. Such a pleasure to have you with us. Coming up next hour, we'll look at a proposal from two LA City Councilmen to support a state ban on killing mountain lions. This in the wake of a permit that was issued to a Los Angeles area man to kill a mountain lion that had attacked his livestock. We'll hear the pros and cons of the LA City Council proposal that's coming up. But first, we look to New Hampshire, where yesterday the first primary of this election year saw three candidates coming away with very strong showing. Bernie Sanders was the leading vote getter with nearly 26% of the vote, followed by Pete Buttigieg with 24%, and then Amy Klobuchar with 20% of the vote. The delegate count, 9 apiece for Sanders and Buttigieg. Klobuchar gets 6. None of the other candidates get delegates. And it was a particularly rough showing for Elizabeth Warren, the senator from neighboring Massachusetts, who ended up with just 9% of the vote in New Hampshire. Joe Biden faring even poorer with 8.5% of the vote. Further down, you have Tom Steyer, Tulsi Gabbard, Andrew Yang, who dropped out of the race yesterday, and Deval Patrick, all of those with very low vote totals in New Hampshire. But Joe Biden said he's undeterred. He left New Hampshire yesterday afternoon, headed to South Carolina, where he spoke to his supporters there.
It is important that Iowa and Nevada have spoken, but look, we need to hear from Nevada and South Carolina and Super Tuesday states and beyond. And look, we're moving in an especially important phase. Because up till now, we haven't heard from the most committed constituents in the Democratic Party, the African-American community. And the fastest growing segment of society, the Latino community. So when you hear all these pundits and experts, cable TV talkers talk about the race, tell them, it ain't over, man. We're just getting started.
Joe Biden in South Carolina, and of course, with Latino voters, Nevada, with its caucuses, follows South Carolina. Significant numbers of Latino voters in Nevada, and then, of course, Super Tuesday, including California, coming up on March 2nd. But let's quickly take a look at New Hampshire. News director, New Hampshire Public Radio, Daniel Barrick is with us. Daniel, first of all, what did we learn about the New Hampshire electorate? Is, you know, so many of them seemingly made up their minds in the final 24 hours before casting votes.
Yes, that's certainly what it seems like if you compare to some of the final polls to the actual outcome yesterday. The real big beneficiary of that kind of final decision-making seems to have been Senator Amy Klobuchar. She went from, you know, sort of a distant fifth or, you know, even sixth place in some polls to a very close third place finish. She finished with about 20% of the vote in New Hampshire compared to 26 for Sanders and 24 for Pete Buttigieg. And I think a lot of that had to do with a sense that, you know, Joe Biden's campaign was not quite gelling, that people were not quite feeling very secure in his ability to, you know, sort of really project energy on the campaign trail. A lot of voters that our reporters spoke to just in the final weekend even of the campaign here pointed specifically to her debate performance on Friday, the televised debate, as really getting their attention and sort of identifying her in their minds as the most viable so-called moderate option. But I think bottom line, that was obviously a storyline. Bottom line, I do think the results show, kind of very similar to coming out of Iowa, a very unsettled and lack of clarity coming out of the New Hampshire electorate with three candidates all within 5 percentage points of each other, and those three having very different both ideological and sort of policy focuses. Still, we're leaving here without a real clear sense of where the electorate is most likely to lean.
Daniel, what do you make of Senator from neighboring Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, having such a poor showing?
Well, that was a real head-scratcher, too. I mean, she has been campaigning officially here in New Hampshire for over a year. She's been kind of campaigning here unofficially for even longer than that. She's been spending a lot of time the last several years cultivating ties to both grassroots activists here in the Democratic Party and party elite. She's been a frequent campaigner over the years for Democrats on the ballot. She was thought to have really developed perhaps the most complete grassroots organizing game. We had reporters out for several weekends over the last month or so with canvassers who were, you know, said they had a really good sense of where their supporters were and how they'd get them out. I think part of it is, you know, she had spent a lot of her campaign here in New Hampshire describing herself as a fighter, using that word over and over again. And I think a lot of voters that we spoke to said they detected a shift in that message where coming out of Iowa, Senator Warren seemed to perceive that perhaps there was an opening for her to describe herself as a unifier, as somebody who could bridge the perceived divide between the Buttigieg and Sanders wings of the party. And I think we honestly spoke to a lot of voters and canvassers and folks on her campaign who said they felt that was kind of a shift in tone that might have confused people. But you're right in terms of the neighboring state. Traditionally, neighboring state candidates here in New Hampshire, I don't think any serious candidate from Massachusetts has ever finished less than second in the New Hampshire primary. So Warren's finish as a fairly distant fourth with less than 10% of the vote, given her fundraising prowess, given her, you know, sort of campaign energy and her message, I think was a real disappointment to a lot of her supporters and quite a surprise.
Also interesting that two moderate candidates, Buttigieg and Klobuchar, combined for 44% of the vote in a party that is widely observed to be moving to the left. Does that track with your analysis of New Hampshire voters that you've got this sizable moderate chunk, or do you think this is more about the individual candidates than the ideologies of the candidates?
I think a lot of it does have to do with the specific electorate here. One thing to keep in mind is that New Hampshire's election laws allow what are known as undeclared voters or independent voters here. Those are voters who are not formally registered as a member of a political party to vote in any primary they want. And particularly in years in which there's only really one contested party primary, so that obviously that's the Democratic one this year, that is a huge chunk of the electorate that is likely to just go into that to vote in that primary. So 40-something% of New Hampshire voters are independents, and they tend to, you know, they tend to be a mixed bag. But a good chunk of them are so-called moderates who are comfortable sort of toggling between parties. New Hampshire Democrats too. I mean, you know, Bernie Sanders, yes, did win 60% of the Democratic primary vote here 4 years ago. But on the whole, Democrats who do well in New Hampshire politics tend to be very much in a kind of Klobuchar line. If you think about our state senators, Maggie Hassan and Jeanne Shaheen, recent governors, both of them were recent governors as well. They very much are, you know, sort of not very flashy, moderate when it comes to, you know, sort of fiscal issues, fairly liberal on social issues. And I think Klobuchar was really trying to hew to that. I mean, she would invoke their names, names of Shaheen and Hassan's name frequently on the campaign trail. And I wonder if that also did kind of help just, you know, neither of them endorsed her. But I think by proxy, her intoning their names and their images may have, you know, made many Democratic voters comfortable casting a ballot for her.
Thanks so much. We really appreciate your being with us, Daniel, and talking about the specific electorate there in New Hampshire and what we take away from yesterday's first primary following the Iowa caucuses, the New Hampshire primary yesterday. Daniel Barrick, thank you so much. News Director, New Hampshire Public Radio, with us on Air Talk. Let's shift now to South Carolina, where the stakes appear even bigger for Joe Biden after his lackluster performances in Iowa and New Hampshire. His campaign has talked about the South Carolina firewall, where you have a huge African-American electorate. Joe Biden continues to poll very well in South Carolina. Jamie Lovegrove is political reporter for Charleston's daily newspaper, The Post and Courier. Jamie, thank you very much for being with us. So Joe Biden left New Hampshire early, arrived in South Carolina, immediately met with his supporters. When is the next poll due out on South Carolina?
That is a question a lot of us are asking right now, and I've actually been calling around to several party officials to see if they have any idea if anything might drop soon. There is no word yet. I think we'd all suspected that folks might wait to see the New Hampshire results before polling South Carolina because they didn't want to have a poll that would just go out the window after New Hampshire. So hopefully we'll get another sense soon. But as you say, the former vice president, at least up until this point, has consistently been the front runner in South Carolina. He's always had a much bigger lead here than he has in any of the other states. And as you point out, that is largely because of the fact that this is a state with a really substantial African-American population. About two-thirds of the Democratic electorate in South Carolina is African-American, and Joe Biden is still very popular among black voters. They still view him very affectionately from his years with the with President Obama, who remains incredibly popular among black voters. And he's also spent a lot of time in South Carolina over the years. He has a lot of relationships here. He was extremely close with Fritz Hollings, who was a longtime Democratic senator in South Carolina. He was one of his best friends in the Senate. So he has a lot of goodwill. The question is, does the momentum that some of these other candidates have gotten out of Iowa and out of New Hampshire begin to threaten that? And that's what we're going to be watching over the next 17 days here.
I'm also interested, when you look at the high percentage of New Hampshire voters who were undecided up till the last minute, and they broke very heavily toward Buttigieg and Klobuchar, the late deciders. And I don't know in South Carolina if you've got a comparable percentage of people who are still on the fence. Maybe not because of the loyalty to Joe Biden among African-American voters. But I would think that's something that Buttigieg and Klobuchar are looking toward, is trying to get those non-committed voters in South Carolina to again break their way.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and actually, one piece of consolation almost for Joe Biden last night was the candidates who did well are actually the candidates who are not particularly threatening him right now in South Carolina. Pete Buttigieg has tried and, for the most part, struggled to earn black support. His campaign has long said that their strategy was that they were going to prove in Iowa and New Hampshire that they are viable, that they are that he is electable, and that when they were able to do that, that would then begin to generate some of the elusive momentum that he has not been able to generate so far in South Carolina. So we're going to see if that happens. And he actually did just today get his first endorsement from a black South Carolina lawmaker, State Representative J.A. Moore, who is down there in the Charleston area in Goose Creek. So that was a significant boost for him. Klobuchar is even further behind in that department. She has not tried and failed. She's just not tried at all, really, so far with African-American voters. So if she's going to come in now, she has very little organization in South Carolina. She didn't have, obviously, nearly as many resources, as much money as Mayor Pete or as Bernie Sanders or many of these other candidates. So she's going to have a very difficult time translating the boost that she got in New Hampshire into success in South Carolina because she just doesn't have that organization. The one candidate that I do want to bring up is Tom Steyer. So he is obviously not in a lot of folks' minds right now because he did not do well in Iowa, did not do well in New Hampshire, but he has spent millions of dollars in South Carolina. He has been all over the television airwaves here. He has been overflowing mailboxes with his flyers, and it's actually leading to quite a bit of traction, and he's been one of the first candidates who actually has been able to chip away at Joe Biden's support from African-American voters. So that is a new dynamic that we have not seen in either of those other two states, and it'll be interesting to see if he can keep doing that.
Jamie, it seems that in New Hampshire, that debate on Friday night, just a few days before the primary, may have factored in very large, particularly given Amy Klobuchar has been such a consistently strong performer in the debates. And it would seem that New Hampshireites really paid attention to that debate in their state Friday night. Do you know when the South Carolina debate is scheduled? And do you anticipate that the stakes could be very big there, that South Carolinians could really be tuned in?
Yes, so the debate will be on the Tuesday of election week in South Carolina, and the primary will be on the Saturday. So just similarly to New Hampshire, it will be just a few days before. You know, yes, I think a lot of folks will be tuning in. I think that it could potentially have a significant impact. My sense is, in answer to your question about how many folks are still, you know, persuadable, how many folks are undecided, is that it's probably smaller than it was in New Hampshire. You know, my sense is that a lot of people here do have a candidate in mind at this point, whether or not it is Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders, who still maintains, you know, some of the popularity that he had last time. You know, I will just say about Bernie Sanders, he got absolutely blown out in South Carolina in 2016. He lost by almost 50% to Hillary Clinton, but he got 26% of the vote. And 26% of the vote this time around could win, so because of how much bigger the field is. So, you know, he is still there, and he has some dedicated supporters. So the answer to your question is, yes, some folks could break late towards the end, and there are some other developments we'll watch towards the end, too. Jim Clyburn, the congressman from South Carolina, very influential, he has signaled that there is still a possibility he may make an endorsement in that last week. That could also sway some voters. So, yes, I still expect there will be some frenetic action as we get closer to February 29th.
And I think of the polls that I've seen overall, not South Carolina specifically, but of the African-American electorate, Bernie Sanders comes up second after Joe Biden. So, yeah, Sanders is still there. And then you mentioned Tom Steyer because of the energy he's put into South Carolina, also appearing to start connecting with African-American South Carolina voters. Thank you so much, Jamie Lovegrove. Good to talk with you. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me.
Political reporter for the Post and Courier. It's the largest newspaper in South Carolina, based in Charleston. Coming up, we'll talk with our political analysts, hear what they have to say about the New Hampshire results, what sorts of solid takeaways, and also what some caveats are to the results in a small state like that, as well as a small state like Iowa, where the caucuses were held earlier as well. You're listening to Air Talk on KPCC, back in just 1 minute. That South Carolina Democratic candidates debate is going to be in Charleston. It's co-hosted by CBS and the Congressional Black Caucus Institute Wednesday night, February 25th. And that's going to be important, of course, for California, because our primary follows the very next week on Tuesday the 3rd. So we're less than a week after that Charleston, South Carolina debate, so that has a great deal of significance here. Joining us to talk about where we stand with the field of 2020 Democratic presidential candidates, the senior advisor for Emerge America, national organization identifying and training Democratic women to run for office, Amanda Renteria. Amanda, good to have you with us again. First of all, your thoughts on Elizabeth Warren and where her campaign stands. Is she still going to be able to raise money?
Well, thanks for having me on. And, you know, it was an interesting night last night to see all the results come in. And I think this last night was tough for her, no doubt, especially being a neighboring state. Now, what I will say is that she does have something like 1,000 volunteers in 31 different states. And her team has had a strategy for Super Tuesday for some time now. But when you see yourself coming out of a neighboring state without any delegates, that does just harm morale, harm the energy. Now, the question is going to be, what does Nevada look like? What does South Carolina look like for her? But no doubt, I'm sure she woke up this morning not feeling particularly great about the outcome. I think that was pretty much the big surprise of the evening.
Well, does this indicate that the progressive sector of the party is starting to unify around Sanders?
It looked like that. But then again, Sanders has always done well in that state, right? And so in that sense, what it means she didn't pull over as many, I think, you know, votes as she thought she would. But again, New Hampshire has always been in the Bernie camp. I think the other thing that really was striking about New Hampshire is how many undecideds went in, which means momentum really mattered as people were going into that ballot box. And I think that's going to be a continual, really a continual drive as we go into Nevada, is where is the momentum, what's happening. And that's why it is harmful to have not done as well as she did in New Hampshire.
Also with us is Nomiki Konst, founding member and board director of Matriarch, a group which works with progressive working class women, developing them to run for office. Nomiki, it's good to have you with us again. You look at yesterday's results. What might you caution as potentially being overblown in the results?
I think, you know, both Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar, yes, of course, they showed strong showings in the results. But moving forward, as we go into South Carolina, as we go into Nevada, as we go into Super Tuesday, they're even with any momentum and positive press out of these early states, they don't have the infrastructure on the ground in those states. They didn't, in the case of Amy Klobuchar, they don't have the money to compete in Texas and California. So I think, you know, this is going to be a momentary blip in their campaigns. Pete Buttigieg notoriously has very little, almost no support from people of color. And that record has followed him. And as we move into Super Tuesday and more diverse states, that's critical. With that being said, I think it creates a little bit of an opening for someone like Mayor Bloomberg to come in. If the establishment side, the more conservative side of candidates, including Joe Biden, are weakened after New Hampshire, Michael Bloomberg, with all the money in the world, can suck up their staff, can suck up, can put ads in these very expensive, large states with big media markets, and can fill that void without competing in the early states, which I think was his strategy all along.
All right. Well, I'd love to hear from AirTalk listeners. If you are an undecided Democrat or lean Democrat voter, you're intending to vote in the Democratic primary March 3rd here in California. I'd like to hear what you're weighing right now. We're at 866-893-KPECC. That's 866-893-5722. We had a huge percentage of New Hampshireites who going into the final day, were undecided about who they were going to vote for. And disproportionately, those voters went to Buttigieg and Klobuchar. So I'm interested in hearing from you. If you are an undecided Democrat or leaning Democratic voter, you're planning to vote in the Democratic primary, then what are you weighing right now? And how much does momentum coming out of these small state contests, Iowa and New Hampshire, factor in? How much are you going to be looking at Nevada caucuses? How important to you is South Carolina? And who does what there? 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Also with us from Claremont McKenna College, visiting assistant professor of government and co-director of CMC's Policy Lab, Zachary Courser. Professor, good to have you with us again. What do you take from yesterday's result?
Hi, Larry. It's great to be here. What's interesting to me is, you know, one of the tried and true ideas of any presidential primary is the idea of momentum. You know, you get a huge boost out of Iowa if you come in the money sort of first or second place. You know, this carries on through New Hampshire and on we go. And what's been interesting about this, of course, is the muddle in Iowa, I think, has thrown a big wrench in this idea of momentum. You know, Bernie is ahead, but, you know, by looking at some projections and sort of anticipating and looking at his performance in the last primary, he seems to be slightly underperforming. You know, Pete Buttigieg, he's coming up quickly. He seems to be obviously competitive, but he didn't quite get the boost that he needed out of Iowa. And so as a consequence, New Hampshire, there were a lot of undecideds going in. I think it's still a bit of a muddle. The one thing that it has, I think, clarified, though, is that Joe Biden is not as competitive as many people, you know, certainly in the moderate lane of this primary race had hoped. And, you know, he seems to be fading fast. You know, the momentum effect is having a dramatic, I think, effect on his ability to fundraise. I think there's a real concern in the Biden camp that he's going to even make it to South Carolina, which was considered to be sort of his, you know, safe, you know, state where he's going to do well with minority voters and he'll finally gain some momentum there. But, you know, time's running out for him. But it's interesting to see this race in another dimension, too, where it's finally clarified, I think. Now that Biden seems to be fading, this moderate lane is opening up and Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar seem to be in it. And Bernie seems to have really overtaken Warren, is now owns the progressive lane. But the question is, you know, how much room is there for Bloomberg to make a move? He's chosen a high-risk strategy, basically to wait till Super Tuesday before voters can make this choice. And so, you know, I'm watching between now and South Carolina just how Bloomberg's numbers move, particularly in states like California. Does his media message, does his ability to project his name through the television and through the media, will that be enough of an effect to where all the lack of momentum he has, because he's not entered a contest yet, can he make that steam up in about 30 days? And so I think the person to watch and the big question mark is, what is the Bloomberg effect?
All right. We're talking with Professor Zach Corser of Claremont McKenna College, Nomiki Konst of the organization Matriarch, and Amanda Renteria of Emerge America. We're getting their thoughts on where we stand. Two contests in now with Iowa and New Hampshire. We've got the Nevada caucuses, South Carolina primary that's coming up, and then Super Tuesday, which has California, Texas, other very significant states. I think Colorado is March 3rd as well. So that's going to be an incredibly important day in determining the nominee. Amanda, I want to come back to you, though. Do you think it's possible that we end up at the convention and it's an open Democratic convention?
I do. Just the numbers that are out there, and in order to get to your final 2,376 number, when you have so many candidates still in the race, and I don't see anyone really moving, and then add in Bloomberg, you can imagine that this thing is going to go for a while. And so in that sense, every single time we still have quite a big field means that the math is all divided. And that part of it means that you get closer to convention and having, having a brokered convention. So I think the Democrats need to be prepared that could absolutely happen.
All right, 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. I'm asking undecided Democrats or Democratic-leaning voters to call in and share what you're weighing right now. What are the things that you're considering? How important is momentum coming into the California primary March 3rd of the previous contests? What are the factors that you're considering right now? We're getting people calling saying, well, I think so-and-so should be there. We're not looking for you to tout a candidate. We're looking for you to call in as an undecided voter to talk about what you're wrestling with right now, the on the one hand, on the other. The why are you undecided? 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Alicia, in downtown Los Angeles, you're on AirTalk. I understand you're undecided. What are you weighing?
So I'm an African-American woman who recently relocated to Los Angeles from Tennessee. And the top two candidates, I think, are Buttigieg and Sanders at this point. They offer a really polarized choice in relationship to Trump. I just don't see either of them speaking to the issues that are important to me. I'm looking to South Carolina because that's the first state to me that looks like the Democratic Party and actually looks like people who represent my same experience. So that's the first state that really matters to me.
All right. So South Carolina is going to be important. If Joe Biden is able to pull it out in South Carolina, last polls we saw he was leading there, would that lead you to consider voting for him?
It certainly would. I'm also looking to see how Warren performs there. I don't know that I feel like she's gotten a fair shake in the first two states, and she's also a candidate I'm keeping my eye on.
Okay. Were you discouraged at all, though, in thinking about Warren, that here's a state that knows her extremely well? She's senator of a neighboring state. She spent a lot of money and time there and had a rough go. Does that discourage you from her?
It doesn't, because New Hampshire is a pretty wealthy state, from what I understand. And I think the policies that she's promoting, much like Bernie, speak to the working class. And I think she's going to find some traction with that in South Carolina.
Actually, New Hampshire, as I understand, is pretty mixed in terms of its economics. It was an interesting analysis I was seeing last night about how the different communities and, you know, whether they're essentially suburbs of Boston or whether they're deeper into the state, sort of how they lay out. Alicia, thank you so much. I appreciate it. So she's looking to South Carolina, the electorate there. She feels really much closer to herself, the issues that she's considering. That's going to be important. I'd like to hear from you what you're considering, what you're looking to in specific states, or to hear from specific candidates, undecided Democrats or Democratic-leaning Californians anticipating voting in the California primary March 3rd, 866-893-KPECC, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Dia in West Hollywood says, I'm not a registered member of a party, but I lean Democratic. I just don't have any trust in the establishment. I'm undecided because I see how the Democratic Party tries to push Sanders and Warren away. That makes me nervous. If Sanders doesn't get the nomination, I'm going to vote for Trump. That's Dia in West Hollywood. 866-893-KPECC. Michael in Koreatown. Michael, as an undecided voter, what are you considering right now?
I'm really looking at the electability of a candidate in terms of what is going to sway voters in states like Pennsylvania and Michigan, where there are more working class and lower income people who may depend on these, who may not agree with the very progressive policies of Bernie Sanders. And so what I'm looking for in the next kind of upcoming weeks is how these candidates, the more moderate candidates, Buttigieg and Klobuchar, are going to kind of enter these races and see what kind of coalitions that they're going to kind of bring in into their campaigns.
And I assume you're somewhat concerned with those two candidates because, as we were just hearing from our analysts, they don't really have the ground game necessarily, or in Buttigieg's case, the breakthrough with African-American voters at this point. So that has to concern you a bit about the two top vote-getting moderates out of New Hampshire.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's also interesting or important to note that these votes may also be split between the moderate candidates, and it wouldn't be, you know, great for kind of the moderates if that vote does get split and then Bernie Sanders ends up winning just because they weren't able to gravitate towards one candidate.
Michael, appreciate it so much. Getting to the complexity of who's aligned where and how they split up the votes. We see that, of course, coming out of the first two contests. Next up, we've got the Nevada caucuses, the South Carolina primary coming up, and then Super Tuesday in early March. We'll continue with our analysts. It's Air Talk on 89.3. We're at 866-893-KPECC. We'll take more of your calls if you're an undecided Democratic or Democratic-leaning voter. What are you looking for to finally make that decision? Back in 90 seconds. Next hour on Air Talk, a proposal from two LA city councilmen to get the state of California to pass a law banning the killing of mountain lions. There can be permits issued currently, as just happened recently. When livestock is repeatedly attacked by mountain lions, then the property owner can get a permit and can take the mountain lion to avoid having livestock killed. We'll talk about the best public policy coming up next hour on Air Talk. I'm asking undecided Democrats as well as Democratic-leaning voters what you're looking for and how important these early contests are in helping you make up your mind on who you're going to vote for. Let's see, Janine in Palm Desert says, I'm trying to decide between Buttigieg Buttigieg and Bloomberg. I like them both because of their being moderate, but I'm wrestling between age. I like the youth of Buttigieg, and I like the experience that Bloomberg has. Floyd in Playa del Rey says, I'm torn between Sanders, Buttigieg, and Klobuchar. I just see a chance with both Buttigieg and Klobuchar of swinging people more middle of the road. I don't see that with Sanders. But if he could get more Latino support, that would help me feel more confident in Bernie Sanders. Albert in South Los Angeles says, I'm undecided. I'm looking for experience. As a veteran, I've traveled the country and I've seen South Bend. I wasn't impressed. I see experience in Bloomberg and Biden. I think after Super Tuesday, I'll make up my mind. That's Albert in South Los Angeles. Let's talk with Kevin in La Crescenta. Kevin, what are you looking for to help you make up your mind?
As the owner of a construction company, I'm looking for their economic platforms. What are they going to do to help guys like me, my employees? What are they going to do to counteract the effects of the tariffs? And I haven't heard anything that's convinced me one way or the other on any of them yet.
All right, Kevin, I appreciate it. Professor Zach Corser of Claremont McKenna College, do you think as the field of candidates shrinks somewhat, we're going to get more into the nitty-gritty of their economic plans and particularly their thoughts about small business owners?
I think that's a possibility. And I think it's because we're sort of seeing clearly now that we've winnowed down the number of candidates that really there's two lanes here. There's the lane of sort of moderate voters. You know, Amy Klobuchar has a very different message than, say, Elizabeth Warren, for example, and she's been increasingly articulating this on the debate stage. I think Bloomberg has not quite yet gotten there. I think his message has been more diffuse. We haven't seen him on a debate stage. We haven't really got a chance to sort of cross-examine him about how he feels about economic issues. He's largely been communicating through the television. Pete Buttigieg, I think he's the one who will be tested, I think, the hardest on this question. I think, you know, he's given a sort of, you know, I'm a Midwesterner. I understand the concerns of voters in Iowa and New Hampshire. But is he going to clarify his message in the same way that Amy has? I think Amy could have an opportunity. We've talked already, though, about how Amy lacks funding and infrastructure moving forward. But in terms of this sort of progressives versus the moderates, and there's so much in that as well in terms of, you know, electability and who can beat Trump. It will be, I think it's entirely possible, and it will be very interesting if the nominee ends up being Bernie Sanders, because you're going to have such sharply different visions economically for this country.
And a Democratic nominee who's not a Democrat.
Well, there's that.
Which I was such an oddity, yeah.
Well, see, I mean, it isn't in the sense that, you know, I think Donald Trump should be seen as somebody who, you know, probably couldn't be considered a Republican or a Democrat if you look at his history politically. But he made a hostile takeover of the Republican Party. Bernie's, I wouldn't call his takeover hostile, but it's definitely a takeover. I mean, you know, you see that sort of third of Democratic primary voters that are very tightly aligned to Bernie Sanders. You feel the tension between sort of rank and file Democratic committee members who feel that Bernie and his supporters, they're kind of outside. And it's, I think it's another example that we saw on the right, but this time on the left, of a kind of distrust or an exhaustion with the establishment, the Democratic establishment in this case, and a kind of hopeful idea that somebody who is an outsider, and Bernie certainly is that, can restore legitimacy and confidence in governance.
We're talking with Professor Zach Corser at Claremont McKenna College. Do you think that Klobuchar's strong showing in New Hampshire is going to lead her to get significantly more money?
I mean, it's, you know, the runway is just so short. She doesn't have much time. We're right on the heels of the Nevada caucuses. And so, I mean, she's got a bit of momentum. I did have a chance to look at some of the exit polling last night to try to get a sense of differentiating between the candidates. One thing that stood out about Klobuchar compared to Bernie was her supporters were overwhelmingly older. Bernie really does have the younger wing of the Democratic Party kind of locked up. But Amy, she only won 4% of voters under 30 and only 7% of those under 45. So moving forward, you know, Amy seems to be taking over for Biden in a lot of ways, but I don't know that those kind of voters are going to make the difference or going to, you know, give her that kind of momentum that she needs to be on fire for not only in terms of votes and media, but for bringing in those dollars.
So funny, isn't it? that the old man is the one who's appealing to the young voters and the middle-aged woman is connecting less strongly with them. It's interesting.
It's, you know, politics is filled with ironies. And yeah. I feel like I understand less and less about politics as each day passes.
Zach, I know you got to go get to class, and we wish you well with that. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me, Larry. Talk to you soon.
All right. Visiting Assistant Professor of Government, Claremont McKenna College. He co-directs the CMC Policy Lab. Zach Corser with us on Air Talk. We continue with Nomiki Konst and Amanda Renteria. Nomiki, let me come back to you to ask about Klobuchar. Do you think that she has much chance here to energize coming out of New Hampshire?
No. I mean, this is the thing that we have to keep in mind here about New Hampshire and Iowa is that these are states that are very good for upstarts and populists. They're small states. There is a lot of runway before these states. People start investing in these states early. It's why Pete Buttigieg did so well in Iowa, was he put most of his resources in Iowa. He spent a ton of energy there. I mean, even during impeachment, although, you know, it's hard to say how much that was a factor, but he was in Iowa while the senators were in Washington during impeachment. So, you know, these are states that are cheaper. The media markets aren't as expensive. You can do more of these, like, big organizing events with rallies because people will turn out that vote. So it's great for campaigns that don't have the money or the headway for the future more expensive states. And I think what's interesting about Bernie Sanders is he has both. He's a populist who did very well in those states last time around, but he also has the money to compete with, at this point, Bloomberg. No one else really has that money or that infrastructure on the ground. So I think, you know, let's just be real here and pull back the layer. This is really going to end up being a race between Bloomberg and Biden at this, or excuse me, Bloomberg and Bernie Sanders at this point. You know, Bernie really does have the capacity on the ground in California. He's leading in almost every poll in states coming up, if not in close second. Nobody else has that consistently in every single state moving forward, and the money to go on TV, and the money to build the infrastructure on the ground. And he's the only person who has a sweeping win against Donald Trump at this point. So I think, you know, we have to have a come to Jesus moment, and somebody who's on the Unity Reform Commission with the Democratic Party to reform it. You know, there is actually a lot of support for Bernie and his ideas in the DNC infrastructure. If you recall 2-3 years ago, when there was the chair race between Keith Ellison and Tom Perez, it was a very close race. And if anything, there's even more pushback against Perez after the mishaps in the last couple of months that has pushed the DNC to want reform so that there is more transparency coming out of the caucus process.
Hmm. It would be interesting to see if Bloomberg connects with voters. He's got a lot of money. He's obviously running ads everywhere. The question is going to be, is that really going to translate into votes? We'll hear what Amanda Renteria has to say as we continue. Once again, I'm asking for Air Talk listeners who are planning to vote in the March 3rd Democratic primary here in California but are undecided right now. What are you weighing? What are you looking at? And how important are the preceding contests in helping you crystallize your vote? 866-893-KPCC. Back in 1 minute. Of course, on these days on Air Talk, we're speaking a lot about politics in this hugely important and interesting election year. But we have Valentine's Day coming up Friday, so we want to have some special fun programming for you to weigh in on. So a quirky segment we're looking at next hour is phobias and how they play out in your romantic relationship. Can be everything from fear of heights, fear of crowds, fear of shopping, fear of insects. How do your fears play out in your romantic relationship? How do you manage them? And in what ways does your romantic partner or spouse deal with it? That's coming up a little bit later on Air Talk here on KPECC. Amanda Renteria of Emerge America. We just heard from Nomiki Konst of Matriarch that she thinks this really seriously a two-candidate race between Sanders and Bloomberg, and the rest is, you know, just kind of they're not really at that level of candidate of the other two. You agree with that?
I think logistics and resources matter. So the idea that Senator Sanders has actually built an operation, for instance, caucus operation in Nevada, that matters. The one thing I'll say that's still a question for me that we really don't know right now is how do communities of color feel and whether or not they have as big of undecideds that really are sitting there waiting to see new candidates, or whether they've really solidified around who their candidates are. And so I think that's still a question. So I don't have a short list of who I think now, how the field will narrow, because we really haven't seen that data come in yet. But I will say this, resources absolutely matter. And what you're seeing with Bloomberg hiring up quite a bit in field and being able to at the same time go on air does make a difference. Now, whether or not there's enough time for voters to tune in will be a big question. But, you know, we've only done two different states, and I think those two states aren't particularly reflective of the full party yet. And there's still some question marks that I have in terms of how this field will narrow.
Well, and the other thing is you've got, you know, in California, as you well know, we've seen many very wealthy candidates run for state office and haven't gotten anywhere, even though they flooded the airways with ads. So I'm not, you know, we've been watching Tom Steyer ads for months now, and that's right. I haven't seen him, you know, be up at the top of the California polling. So I guess I'm still a little skeptical that the super wealthy candidates with all the ads, that necessarily translates with voters.
Yeah, and I'll actually add to that, and I think this is what's different about the Bloomberg campaign, is they're buying field programs as well. And so it's not just an air, it's not just commercials, but they're putting in the infrastructure all across the Super Tuesday states. And remember, they didn't invest in the early four, so they were able to have folks on the ground before anyone else really did, or as every other campaign was scrambling to go from, you know, one state to the next state, the way you do in a presidential campaign. He actually, from the beginning, said, here is how I'm going to put folks in. He was able to grab some talent that other campaigns just couldn't afford at the time. And that's the part that's going to be really interesting to see as we move through the early four, and gives him an advantage, I think, in Super Tuesday states with the resources he has.
Janet in Santa Monica, good to have you with us on Air Talk. You're an undecided Democrat, and what are you weighing?
I am weighing the results of the two upcoming events in Nevada and South Carolina before I vote, because I want to see more of a plurality from different types of states with different diverse voters before I make my own decision. Generally, I am a more ideological voter, and I vote for a candidate who appeals to my worldview and their policies and programs. 2020 is very different for me. My sole purpose is a Democrat who can replace Trump as our president. So I am actually open to voting for any candidate, in particular the candidate who is the strongest candidate.
So the ideological perspective, less important to you. You're looking at who can beat Trump.
Absolutely.
All right, Janet, I appreciate it. Let's talk next with Nina in Santa Barbara. You're on Air Talk.
Hi, I'm 74, and I'm leaning towards the younger bunch, which is Amy and Pete. I actually think some of these people are lost their moment. Joe Biden has had his time. I think Bernie Sanders is way too late and too old. Older people in Santa Barbara do say that to each other, but I have children in their 30s and 40s, and they are going just the opposite direction. They are leaning towards... No, not the young ones, the older ones, and they're banging on doors in New York City for Bernie Sanders. They're very highly involved and real activists. My son's a filmmaker and makes really important films, but I think they're going the wrong direction. I honestly think that we need someone who can really stand up to Donald Trump. Really.
Nina, I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. Mike in Glendale, as an undecided or leaning Democrat, as I understand it, what are you considering now?
I'll be the first to admit I made a mistake. I voted for Trump in 2016 because the DNC shoved Hillary in our face. We didn't want her. I'm not going to make the same mistake again. I was leaning on Warren, but given her performance yesterday, I have no idea who I'm going to vote for. I'm going to wait and see the next two primaries, how they're going to go. I do not want Biden or another billionaire such as Bloomberg, because I would hope for either Pete or Sanders. But at this point, I'm leaning more towards Sanders.
So you've got two different ideological candidates there. For you, is the electability what's going to make you decide between them, or what happens in other primaries?
It's more of Sanders' plan. I mean, Warren has a plan for everything. Sanders, I feel like he just promises a lot of things and doesn't have a real plan. If him and Warren team up together for VP and P, then I would 100% vote for them, because I feel Warren has the implementation of these plans, and I don't feel Bernie is very specific about what he wants to do.
All right, Mike, I appreciate your call. Thank you. I appreciate it. Let me share. Maria in Silver Lake says, I'm a woman of color, Latina. I'm very undecided. I want to be a proud American again. I want someone who's inspiring to my kids. And Amy Klobuchar, is who I'm leaning toward at this point, but still undecided. Angela writes on the page, I'm a black voter, registered as no party preference. My concern is that black votes are considered important during the campaigns, and then our needs are ignored over the next 4 years. I'm still waiting and watching. I'm not completely sold on any of the Democratic candidates yet. That's Angela writing on the AirTalk page, and she has a Shirley Chisholm for president icon that she's using for herself. Shirley Chisholm, who I believe was the first African-American candidate for president. I want to thank our guests, Amanda Renteria of Emerge America, where she's senior advisor, Nomiki Konst of Matriarch. Both of those organizations help develop women to run for Democratic office around the country. And earlier with us, Zach Corser, professor at Claremont McKenna College. Also want to remind you, of course, even though we're weeks away, the KPCC is going to be bringing you Super Tuesday, California primary coverage on election night. There's no reason you have to look anywhere else. It's going to be a very big night. Libby Dankman will be joining me in studio with all the California results, and NPR is going to be with us, interweaving with its coverage of all the other state primaries on the big Super Tuesday. It's going to be a heck of a night. You want to be here. It's going to be exciting, and KPCC will be your election central for Super Tuesday.